The first thing I should stress is that this talk will very much emphasise the participation from the identity provider's point of view. Owing to time constraints that are inevitable, I haven't really been able to focus at all on the service provider side of things. So hopefully those of you from the service provider community won't feel too shortchanged by that. But of course, if you have any questions, do feel free to pipe up at the end or afterwards. Strictly speaking, the UK Federation does not have any technology requirements whatsoever. The rules of membership, all the rules of membership say is that participating member organisations should give consideration to our recommendations. Operationally, however, the UK Federation is based around something called SAML. SAML stands for the Security Assertion Markup Language. It's an XML dialect for expressing security assertions. It's a widely implemented and very widely deployed standard for access management. Practically speaking, however, the UK Federation is very much shibboleth-based. Shibboleth has been mentioned a few times this morning already, and it is, strictly speaking, it's a SAML implementation with a focus on federation within the research and education communities. The other reason why it's important is that at the moment it's what everyone else in the UK Federation pretty much currently uses. This is a question we get asked a lot. Can I use something other than Shibboleth? The answer is yes, but it's not something that we would recommend at the moment. We are looking into the other possibilities for participation with software from other vendors, but at the moment, this is not something that we support or recommend. As was discussed earlier, we have two different types of participant within the UK Federation. First, we have the identity provider, and the identity provider is in the business of issuing things called assertions. And there are two types of assertions that we're interested in. The first are authentication assertions, and this is where the identity provider says, I claim that I have authenticated this user. And that is effectively all of the information that is being bundled across within that assertion. The other type of assertion is called an attribute assertion, where the identity provider makes some claim about some properties that the user possesses. The service provider consumes assertions that are issued by the identity provider. And the UK Federation says that these assertions can be used in two different ways. The first way is for service access control, which is, I guess, the resident on debtor of the Federation, and also for presentation. The other aspect is for the generation of anonymised aggregated usage statistics so that service providers can get a view on, for example, how their service is being used by users from particular organisations, so on and so forth. Issuing and consuming assertions requires trust. Trust is a highly overloaded, badly used term. And rather than go into the deep technical issues around trust, I just want to draw up some of the ways in which we care about trust. So, for example, is this personal information secured from eavesdroppers that I'm about to push over the network? That requires trust. Is the organisation to whom I am passing this information who they claim to be? That's another way that we care about trust. Is this organisation that I'm about to pass this information to a member of the UK Federation? That is also another type of trust. And as a service provider, if I've received some information from an identity provider, is there any way that I can retroactively prove that this information that I was given in the past was actually false? This is another type of trust. These are very complicated issues, and the Federation facilitates the resolution of these problems. It does it by providing what is known as a trust fabric that facilitates exchange of assertions between participating members. One of the things that often comes up by people thinking about federation is that they look at the standards or the implementations. They look terribly complicated. And they look at other things like OpenID, which is another technology for doing federation in a sense. And these look simpler. And they say, well, why don't we just use these other simpler technologies? The problem is that these simpler technologies are simpler because they avoid the difficult questions. And where you don't have a trust fabric, then you significantly reduce the value of federation. So, as an IDP, what are the things that you need to consider from a technical perspective? Well, first of all, obviously, you need to implement a Shibboleth Identity Provider. This is the network service that will be sitting on your network, taking in requests for assertions from service providers and issuing responses. One common misconception about Shibboleth is that it is an authentication service. It doesn't authenticate users. It is not an authentication service. All it does is issue assertions. You have a different service for doing authentication, for authenticating your users, and that is known as the authentication service. Another misconception about Shibboleth is that it stores information. It doesn't store information. Shibboleth just provides a means to expose information that you have stored in some type of back end, for example, an Active Directory or whatever, to the wider world. Certificates. Certificates are critical to the Federation Trust Fabric, and it allows your IDP to prove its identity to other participants within the Federation. And finally, there is the Federation metadata, which is used by Federation participants to prove that they, well, it's used in several different ways, but it's used primarily to establish by IDPs that service providers are who they claim to be and that they are a particular participant within the UK Federation. So, briefly on the identity provider, the Shibboleth IDP is simply a Java application and it runs on any platform where Java runs. Straightforward as that. So Linux, Unix, Windows, Mac. That covers all of the main platforms that are widely deployed at the moment. Installation is very straightforward. There's very little to say about it. Configuration complexity will vary considerably depending on your own institutions, or your own organisation's backends, depending on where you've stored your user information, whether it's distributed in many user databases or in one database, so on and so forth. So it's very difficult to generalise about this. And really, for the rest of the talk, I'll be focusing on these other bits of the infrastructure that you need to be thinking about. The most important part of the infrastructure is the authentication service. And this is the service that tells the Shibboleth IDP who the user is who's coming in. Okay, so remember, Shibboleth does not do authentication itself. It relies on a third party, your authentication service, to tell it who the user is. This allows the use of a variety of authentication methods. So the beauty of Shibboleth is it doesn't tie you down to a particular way of authenticating your users. You can, within reason, authenticate your users using any sort of credentials. And I'll come on to that briefly. However, having said that, most institutions, schools, so on and so forth, these days typically already have some kind of single sign-on service internally for access to internal resources. And generally speaking, your Shibboleth IDP will be a client of that single sign-on service. So, for example, CAS, PubCookie, WebAuth, these sorts of things that are widely deployed. So, in what I hope will clarify what I've just said, I'll just work through a diagram which illustrates how authentication works. So we have a user who wants access to some service at a service provider. The user browses to the service provider. The service provider does not know who this user is and says, "Nope, you're not coming in. I want an authentication assertion from the organisation that you are affiliated with that satisfies my requirements." So the service provider sends an authentication request via the user's browser to the authentication service at the user's home organisation. Now, as I said earlier, there could be Shibboleth does not tie you into any particular way of authenticating a user. It could be password, or user certificates, or Kerberos, or pretty much anything you like. Generally speaking, most organisations are using username and password authentication because that's what's widely deployed at the moment. It's familiar to users. That's fine. Irrespective of how you choose to authenticate your users, the username is passed to the Shibboleth IDP. So the Shibboleth IDP simply takes the username as presented by the authentication service, and this is wrapped up in an HTTP header, remote user. And with that information, it says, right, this is user Joe Bloggs, I will generate an authentication assertion and send it to the service provider. This then permits the user access to the service. What to do next? Well, pretty much everyone here hopefully will have a credential store of some description, a user database. This is likely to be Active Directory, but it could be a number of other different types of systems. The most important thing is that this is likely to constrain how you're going to be authenticating your users. If you already have an authentication service deployed, such as CAS or something else, then you need to just verify that this will work with Shibboleth. The easiest way to do this is to check with your vendor or whichever community it is that maintains your web single sign-on service. If you don't have an authentication service, then Shibboleth does ship with a very simple form-based authentication service that you can use. Alternatively, you can consider any of the widely available free web single sign-on services. And in fact, you can even just use the authentication systems that come with your web server. So, for example, Apache comes with support for HTTP basic authentication. You can use that, which is fine for development and testing purposes. Attributes. We've already had a lot of questions about attributes, so I'll try and cover some of the ground that people were asking about. Most service providers require at least one attribute, and possibly more, about users. These attributes are properties of users that describe certain characteristics about the user. They may determine the user's access privileges. This is what we consider the main function of the federation. And also it may allow the service to personalise the experience for the user. The Shibboleth IDP does not store these attributes, remember. Instead, it relies on some other system to store it and manage it for it. And generally, this will be an LDAP directory or an SQL database. However, it doesn't have to be an LDAP directory and SQL database because Shibboleth is very flexible and you can even script it. So, for example, if you have some form of way of storing user information that doesn't have an LDAP interface or it doesn't have an SQL interface and it has some other interface that you can probe using a script, then that's fine. You can just script it. This makes it very flexible and deployable in pretty much any sort of scenario. The UK Federation recommends four core attributes. The first of these is EduPerson scoped affiliation, and this has a controlled vocabulary of, I think, six different types of six values, and one of the values is shown there, member, and that simply asserts, in this case, that the user to which this assertion refers is a member or affiliated to the IDP specified on the right-hand side of the at symbol. That's scoped affiliation. The second is EduPerson entitlement. This is an attribute that is, the value is controlled, or specified rather, by the service provider. And so it's service provider specific. So if you want access to a service provider which requires that you release this value, the service provider will tell you in advance what the values are, and you just have to release it. The third is EduPerson principal name. And this is a global persistent identifier for the user. So in this case, josh.h@dev.ja.net. This is an identifier that's common across that is common across all service providers. The problem with that one, of course, is that it allows. Sorry, the problem with EduPerson principal name is that service providers can obviously match up josh.h@dev.ja.net and try and establish, and they may be able to establish exactly who the user is. So we have 80-person targeted ID, the value of which is different depending on which service provider you go to. So if you go to service provider A, it will have some random value. If you go to service provider B, it will be a completely different random value. This allows the same service provider to identify the same user every time the user comes back, but it prevents service providers from collaborating and establishing out of band that a user is actually a specific person. Other attributes may also be needed if your application can't be realized with these four core attributes. We don't provide any recommendations on these other attributes, other than we recommend that you use attributes from the EduPerson or some other LDAP schema, and that you don't go about needlessly inventing too many attributes, because this will just result in a proliferation of attributes and a degree of confusion. Here is just some example attributes and some service providers. As you can see, EduPerson targeted ID is the most widely... Well, actually, this is a rather bad example because it doesn't show that EduPerson targeted ID is the most commonly used attribute, but it is. And EduPerson principal name is also one that's used by a couple of service providers as well. So we've just run through the attribute assertion, request, and response workflow. The user does something at the service provider, and the service provider says to itself, right, I need some kind of information about this user in order to proceed. The service provider issues an attribute request to the user's Shibboleth IDP. The Shibboleth IDP, remember, does not store any attributes about users. Instead, it relies upon one or more attribute stores, such as a Microsoft Active Directory, and it returns that value to the service provider. It will only return that value if you have configured your Shibboleth IDP to release that information to that specific service provider. What to do next? The first thing is it's very desirable to have a single authoritative source of user information. It's not necessary, but it's highly desirable. If you don't have a single authoritative source of information in a single repository, then management of that information becomes difficult. It's not so much the configuration of Shibboleth that becomes difficult, it's just managing that information and making sure that it reflects reality. If all this information is in a single place, your life is much simpler. You also have to consider how you're going to manage the user attribute release policy, and this is the policy that determines whether or not an attribute gets released to a specific service provider. The Data Protection Act requires informed consent, so you need to get informed consent from your users before you go about releasing personally identifiable information. There are tools that allow you to do this, so tools that will provide an interface to your users so that they can personally choose which attributes they're willing to release to specific service providers, or you can use some other mechanism. If you want to go about federating your own internal resources, as has been previously mentioned this morning, you can, of course, consider the benefits of exposing a much richer variety of attributes about your users to your own systems, because those are systems that you're in control of, so you're not releasing personal information to third parties. So any sort of information that you might hold about your users, feel free to distribute that to your other systems within your organisation, if appropriate. Certificates. Certificates are a core part of the Federation Trust Fabric. They are used by identity providers and service providers to authenticate each other, first, and secondly, to protect the assertions while in transport and to allow the service provider to establish that the assertion was actually generated by the IDP in question. The certificates that you deploy as part of the Trust Fabric must be issued by, should be issued by an accredited certificate authority. These are certificate authorities whose products we have tested and verified work with the UK Federation. So Janet Service Certificate Service, about which I'll say something a little shortly, the UK e-Science Certificate Authority, GlobalSign, Thought, and VeriSign. Browser-facing certificates, this is actually, strictly speaking, out of scope of the UK Federation, but I'm just going to touch on it very briefly. You will use browser-facing certificates as an IDP either to protect the user's credentials when they're logging into the authentication service, or they'll be used by a service provider if the service provider wishes, for whatever reason, to protect its content as it travels over the internet. And you can use whatever certificate products you choose in those instances. So you could even use certificates from a self-signed certificate authority, for example. What to do next? The first thing really is to decide from which certificate authority you're going to get your certificate from. The one I'd recommend, of course, is the Janet UK Service Certificate Service. This will issue certificates free of cost to Janet-connected organisations. Finally, the Federation metadata. It's rather difficult to talk about Federation metadata within a single PowerPoint slide. I like to think about it in terms of architecture, and that the Federation metadata is the keystone that holds up the arch where the pillars are service providers on one side and identity providers on the other side. If you take out the keystone, the arch collapses. The Federation metadata is very important. It has three primary functions. The first is as a directory of Federation participants. It allows, for example, service providers to say, I need to pick up an attribute from such and such organisation, where do I get it from? It describes the capabilities, the technical capabilities of Federation participants, and also it may also describe some aspects of their policies as well. And finally, most importantly, it provides the means of establishing technical trust. So this organisation is who they say they are, and that it is a particular organisation within the UK Federation. What to do next? Quite straightforward. Understand the declarations that you will be asked to make when your entities are added to the UK Federation metadata. And the most important part of this is Section 6, user accountability. Because user accountability, whether you choose to assert it or not, is indicated within Federation metadata. Also very important, ensure that your identity provider is configured to regularly refresh the UK Federation metadata, by which I mean to say download it from the Federation metadata servers. If you don't keep up to date with Federation metadata and you fall out of date, then run the risk of falling foul of all sorts of problems. A couple of other considerations. Networking. The IDP will require access to TCP 8443 from any. So this is a system that will be in your DMZ somewhere. The authentication service, and remember this is the service which users go to plug in their credentials to get authenticated, will probably also require TCP 443 or HTTPS from any as well, if you expect or if you require your users to be authenticating from anywhere on the internet, which is a very likely scenario. Resilience is very important, and there are two high availability options for Shibboleth. The first is HAShib, and the second is CryptoShibHandle, both rather cryptic names. So in conclusion, the first thing and the most important thing is to join the UK Federation as soon as possible, irrespective of your technical readiness. It's just a paper exercise that's useful to get out of the way. There's no harm in doing it. Secondly, audit your existing infrastructure, hopefully on the basis of what you've learned today, and identify and address any deficiencies that you identify. Acquire your certificates. Remember, you don't have to pay for these. You can go to the Janet Service Certificate Service and register your entities through Janet Customer Services. Implement your IDP. test it, obviously, and build your confidence in the system. And finally, consider federating your internal services as well. If you've gone to the trouble of implementing Shibboleth for access to external resources, why not use the same system for federating access to your internal resources as well? Thank you.